This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Some more cabinet confirmation hearings today. We have to talk about the elephant in the room we're all ignoring right now. Sean Spicer joins us. Stu joins us. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, so let's dig into the elephant in the room we're all kind of ignoring right now. The economy. In the not in, you know, nerd terms, what it means for you, what it means for me, what it means for our standard of living, our purchasing power. And we haven't been talking about this much because we're all doing the exact same thing right now. I'm doing the exact same thing you were doing. We won the election. Everything's good. We're all kind of wincing and cringing every time Joe Biden wakes up in the mornings. We know he's going to do something else terrible, but we're just kind of biding our time until all Monday rolls around and we can get Trump in there and finally get some sanity and all that. But we're all doing the same thing. I'm in the exact same boat you are. But the truth is, real people, normal people, are still suffering because of what they've done to the value of the dollar. And it looks like right now, that's going to get even worse. You see, inflation is because of government spending and printing, period. End of story. Inflation is because of government spending and printing. I know you already know that, but the norms and normas in the world, they don't. Even if they get mad about the latest spending bill that comes out of Congress, oh, $1 trillion bill, that sucks. They don't put two and two together. That is why you can't afford eggs anymore. Washington spending. And the communists are trying to torch as much as they can possibly torch on the way out the door. Inflation just came in hotter than it should have been, 2.9%. That, of course, is tacked on to the 20% plus inflation we've felt over the last 4 years. That's why you used to buy a dozen eggs for a dollar, and now you're buying a dozen eggs for $6. That's why you can't afford to do basic construction anymore. The cost of living is through the roof in every possible way. Well, congratulations, it's getting worse. It continues to get worse. And what's Joe Biden doing about it? Trying to shore things up on the way out the door, get our fiscal house in order? Of course not. He just announced $2.4 billion in IRS stimmy checks getting sent out to people. Another $2.4 billion we don't have, so yet another dirtball politician can buy the approval of the American people on the way out the door. This is, gosh, I can't believe I'm going to use this word. I hate using this word. Everyone uses this word. Unsustainable. That's what this is. It is unsustainable. And what's so crazy about government spending to me, I've always thought it was so crazy. You've probably heard me ask a question along these lines is, everyone knows it's unsustainable. It's not just like it's you or me. The people who are doing the spending, senators, House of Representatives, presidents, they all know it's unsustainable too, because it's basic math. You can't go on like this. You can't spend twice as much as you take in without end. That's not how life works. That's not how economies work. Everybody knows this has to stop, and nobody wants to stop it. I can't stand it. I've used the analogy before. Look, I love my own analogy so much, I'm going to use it again here. We as a country, we've had the biggest party in the world. We rented out the biggest recreation complex you've ever seen. They got go-karts, open bar, yummy pizza, music. And we have just been putting everything on the credit card. Woo, keep the party going. But we know, everyone knows, there's a limit on the credit card, and we're all sitting there watching. We have the app on our phone. We're watching as we approach the limit. And nobody wants to turn on the lights, turn off the music, and say, hey guys, it was fun, it's cleanup time. Nobody wants to do it. And everyone knows it needs to be done. And who suffers? We suffer. I'm not worried about the politicians. I'm frankly not worried about Democrats, of course. I'm not really worried about Republicans. I'm worried about you. I'm worried about the American people watching their standard of living go into the toilet. Now, it looks like we have some level of sanity coming in, of course, because Trump has his pick. Scott Bessent came out today. This is what he said.
The federal government has a significant spending problem, driving deficits that have averaged an historically high 7% of GDP during the past 4 years. We must work to get our fiscal house in order and adjust federal domestic discretionary spending that has grown by an astonishing 40% over the past 4 years. Productive investment that grows the economy must be prioritized over wasteful spending that drives inflation. As President Trump has said, we will unleash the American economy by implementing pro-growth regulatory policies, reducing taxes, and unleashing American energy production. For too long, our nation has allowed unfair distortions in the international trading system. President Trump was the first president in modern times to recognize the need to change our trade policy and stand up for American workers. If confirmed, I look forward to working with President Trump and members of this committee to do just that.
Sounds good. We'll see what he can do. I did enjoy him tearing apart Senator Wyden, who's a piece of crap.
Now there is a big effort in the Trump administration to reverse it. I think that's going to be bad for the economy, but it is going to be damn good for China, because we are in an arms race on clean energy with them. Are you going to be on the side of people who want to unravel this?
Senator Wyden, just so we can frame this for everyone in the room, China will build 100 new coal plants this year. There is not a clean energy race. There is an energy race.
It's pretty good. It's pretty true. Of course, the communists in this country have told you it's all about the solar panels, but China makes the solar panels. They don't rely on the solar panels. China relies on the coal plants they're putting up. Yeah, one gigantic fleecing of the taxpayer. So we have a mountain to climb, and Congress has to get serious about it. Now, maybe you heard Chip Roy come on this show. It doesn't sound like Congress wants to turn on the lights and turn down the music and stop the party, does it?
My colleagues have their head up their rear right now, and they're about to try to go do a deal with Democrats to pass a monster appropriations package rather than cutting spending and limiting the size and scope of government, which is no way to start things under the Trump administration. We wanted upfront cuts, and in exchange for that, secure the border, defense, and a debt ceiling increase for the president. But our swamp preacher colleagues are rejecting that. And instead, what they're talking about now is the monster big reconciliation package, which won't have the cuts in place that need to be put in place unless we fight for them. And importantly, they're now talking about taking the debt ceiling, probably 4 years and $10 trillion, attaching that to the appropriations package, plus funding for California, and put that all in one great big package, because that's the way swamp creatures think.
Does that sound like these people are going to tackle inflation to you? Doesn't sound like it to me. But Trump's Office of Management and Budget looks to be staffed with some really solid people. Now, most people don't know what that is, in case maybe you're a little fuzzy on it. Mark Paletta, remember, he came on the show and explained what it does.
What it does is it's a sort of tip of the spear, as we viewed ourselves, within the executive office of the president. They set it up so that there is this office that's big enough to help kind of oversee the rest of the other agencies, to help them make them support the president's agenda. Sometimes you have agencies, right? The State Department, other places that kind of go off track. So they help put together the budget for the president, right? So all the agencies submit their requests and what they want to spend things on and all that kind of stuff. It goes into OMB. Russ is the one in working with those agencies and working with the president and the White House to finalize that budget and make it, you know, the budget that the president presents up to Congress. Then it's actually working with those agencies to make sure that they are implementing it as the year goes along. And there's a lot of power, there's a lot of levers to help make sure that the president's agenda is being implemented at the agency level. And so that's what OMB does by and large.
Okay, so who's this Russ guy? It's Russ Vaughn, and Russ killed it.
Today, nearly 80% of Americans do not feel confident that their children will lead better lives than they have. That's nearly double the 40% of Americans who said the same just two decades ago. When I look at government waste and our national debt, I know I fear for my daughter's future. Almost half of our fellow citizens expect their standard of living to be worse than that of their parents. We have to use taxpayer dollars wisely, because inflation driven by irresponsible federal spending taxes Americans twice. The average American household has lost roughly 2,000 of purchasing powers just since January 2021. The forgotten men and women of this country, those who work hard every day in cities and towns across this country, deserve a government that empowers them to achieve their dreams.
Sounded pretty good. And we always enjoy it when our sharp people slap around Democrats.
And I'm deeply concerned about reporting that indicates that you designed the plan to abuse the National Emergency Act to circumvent laws passed by Congress by moving military construction money to build the border wall.
We were specifically using the transfer authority that had been provided in the language of the Department of Defense appropriations to be able to transfer that authority to the Army Corps of Engineers for its use on the border wall. It was specifically a transfer authority that Congress had given the president in the underlying appropriation.
You know, you said that OMB was not an agency where you had a bureaucratic problem. But which bureaucracies specifically do you believe have been weaponized?
Again, I'm not going to get into all of the agencies that I believe have some of those characteristics.
Let's give an example of one.
I think, you know, the Department of Justice is clearly one that has bureaucracies within it that engaged in trying to take out their own president during the first term. The extent to which the FBI goes and investigates someone that comes to a school board meeting in Loudoun County for being concerned about the situation with his daughter, and then gets investigated as a domestic terrorist.
Pretty good. All that may have made you uncomfortable, or maybe very comfortable, made me uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, Trump's talking about creating an external revenue service. What is all this about? We'll talk to Vince about that in just a moment. Before we do, let me talk to you about putting your money where your morals are. Because when you look at all these government meetings and budget hearings and things like that, does it ever occur to you that you fund all that? I fund all that. We go to work every day and these people steal our money and we pay for all that garbage. You realize that? So if you're getting pillaged by the government, you don't have to get pillaged by corporate America. Verizon hates you. AT&T, T-Mobile, these companies despise your values. They're quite open about it. You don't have to pay them for the privilege. Pure Talk is the wonderful, patriotic cell phone company whose CEO is a veteran. They love America so much they hire Americans. When you talk to somebody on Pure Talk, you speak to an American who speaks English. And that is freaking refreshing in this day and age where every call is routed through some third world dump and you have to repeat yourself 85 times on the phone. Switch to Pure Talk. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
The final criteria I used was, because you can say all those things and say you stand for it, I wanted somebody with a demonstrated record of delivering results on those important issues. Talk is cheap. We need people that have demonstrated fidelity to these principles with their actions. So that is why today I'm proud to announce that I am selecting our Attorney General, Ashley Moody, to serve as our next U.S. Senator.
Okay. What does that mean? I mean, this Ashley Moody character, what do you know about her? We don't have very many good senators. There's like four of them. Is she going to be one of them? Let's ask Vince about that. Joining me now, host of the Vince Colonnaise Show, Vince Colonnaise himself. Okay, Vince, most people don't live in Florida. While politicos like you and I are going to be familiar with Ashley Moody, most people are not. Who is she? What's she all about?
Well, Ashley Moody is one of the good Republicans who were one of the few people who had a chance to fight back against the Biden administration with any power. Because remember, these past few years, Republicans have been in the political wilderness. And so the only people who really had a chance to fight back against the Biden administration were the state attorneys general. And in Florida, Ashley Moody has been one of those. She has fought back against the COVID mandates imposed by the Biden administration. She has been relentlessly fighting back against our adversary, China, in whatever capacity she can in Florida. You know, she's basically had a pretty good track record, including going after Jack Smith for the raid on Mar-a-Lago and defending President Trump's rights, as well as his co-defendants down there, to the best of her ability. So I think in terms of the kinds of signals that you and I are going to look for, is this the kind of person who should be a senator? I think DeSantis probably picked someone who at least has on paper a pretty good record that would say, okay, she seems acceptable.
What a surprise. DeSantis delivers on something like he always does. What do we know about her? I know she was AG, but what do we know about her when it comes to illegals, when it comes to guns, when it comes to spending? What do we know?
On the issue of illegal immigration, she's also been very tough on border issues. Okay. So again, just as a state attorney general, as a prosecutor, she's been really focused on that issue, suggesting, of course, that in the United States Senate, she'll be focused on it there as well. And that's consistent, by the way, with the entire upper regime in Florida, led by Ron DeSantis, who have been relentless in terms of helping focus on the border issue and trying to address it, even going so far as deporting illegals to Martha's Vineyard in order to force the left to have to deal with the problem that they created. So again, Ashley Moody gets good marks there.
Okay. Speaking of Senate seats, we're now being told that Vivek is being pushed to go for that open Senate seat in Ohio. I thought Vivek was going to head up Doge with Elon. But what's happening with all this?
Well, you know, when he started basically going silent over the last few weeks, it really came in the wake of him suggesting he put himself in the hornet's nest in terms of what it seemed to be a pretty big approval of the H-1B visa program. And it didn't seem quite as focused on America first as people wanted. And so he kind of fell out of the public debate. But that's a little unusual for Vivek, because, you know, when he's in the center of the political debate, he kind of likes to stay there. I started to suspect at that time that may be a play for a higher office. The reason we're not hearing quite so much from him is because something else is planned. Now, I don't know. It doesn't strike me. In the past, it seemed like he was out of the running to be a senator there. There's also some conversation of whether or not he wants to run for governor. So we'll see what happens with Vivek. But look, he's a pretty effective communicator. And when he screws up, it's entirely appropriate for the rest of us to roll up a newspaper and bonk him on the head. But I like Vivek on our side. I think he's pretty talented.
Speaking of dark money, there's a lot of talk about dark money out there. Joe Biden talked about dark money yesterday.
We need to get dark money. That's that hidden funding behind too many campaign contributions. We need to get it out of our politics.
I thought Joe Biden was the king of that.
He just gave George Soros a Medal of Freedom like 4 days ago, I think. He wants to get dark money out of politics. You know, that speech was sad, first and foremost, because of his feeble delivery, which, of course, we've come to expect. But the hilarity of it is the never ending gaslighting that we are subjected to by the left. For him to sit there and suggest that there's an oligarchy forming, that there's rich interests, dark money interests who are forming to take over the country, is pretty rich coming from a guy whose party controls almost every single meaningful institution in our country, has done it with glee and with reckless abandon. It's, you know, of course, President Trump gets elected to reject that. And if a couple of rich guys do want to support Trump and the agenda that I believe in and that you believe in, fine, glad to have them on our side. That doesn't mean we stop scrutinizing them, but the idea that the left is somehow speaking for the common man is just flatly absurd and untrue, especially given that they seem to only line their own pockets and serve their own interests. Hunter Biden was standing in the room with Joe as he made that address last night. And so they're as brazen as ever.
The External Revenue Service, this is an idea of Trump's. I'm assuming it's one he's going to follow through on. What do we think about this? What do we know about this?
Well, this gets to the point that the president made on the campaign trail relentlessly, which is he wants to get back to the late 1800s structure of the United States when it came to how we collect revenues. And that was to impose tariffs on foreign countries and to encourage the production of American-made products, and which consumers, of course, would turn to in an environment where you have international products being more expensive. We're dealing with a lot of adversaries who play by very unfair rules, especially China, which steals so much technology and is, of course, very meddlesome. They rely on slave labor. I mean, it's about as awful as it can possibly get when it, in terms of China's manufacturing and their process. It's not a fair playing field. The president wants to address that, and he thinks it's going to be very good for the country. So with that in mind, you know, I hate the IRS. I hate having to deal with them every year. The idea that somebody else would be paying revenues to the Treasury outside of this country, the External Revenue Service, I'm feeling good about that already. And in terms of how it would work, look, these agencies, including the Treasury Department specifically, they've already got offices dedicated to how they handle tariffs. He's probably going to rename a couple of them, call it the External Revenue Service. But the big thing here, Jesse, is it's a sign of his seriousness. He wasn't just saying it to get elected. He meant it.
I like it. But a more serious Trump this time, totally on board with it. Vince, as always, awesome work. Come back soon, please. All right. We should probably talk to Stu. Just see what Stu's brewing on. See what he thinks about all these confirmation hearings, the External Revenue Service, and other things. Before we talk to Stu, let me talk to you. See what I did? I made that rhyme. I want to talk to you about Dream Powder from Beam. You want to sleep good every night? Feel good every morning when you wake up? Because that's the difference when it comes to Dream Powder. It's a cup of hot chocolate with natural things in it that'll help you sleep. But every time, it doesn't matter what it's been, prescription, over-the-counter, every single time I've ever taken something to sleep in my life, I wake up in the morning, I almost feel like I'm on drugs. I'm so groggy and miserable. With Dream Powder, I feel rested. That's because it's natural and it's delicious. You want to sleep like a baby every night? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Establishment of the Highlands National Monument. Here we go. Got to fill this in. I know, Santina, I'm trying. Why, the day of, in this hand, you'll fill in the dates here, guys? All right.
4 years. guys, been running the country for 4 years. I can't wait to hear what Stu has to say about that and other things. Joining me now, obviously, host of Stu Does America, freaking hilarious, one of my favorite shows, Stu Bergier. Okay, first of all, Stu, Joe Biden has obviously not been running anything for 4 years, but who has? Everyone keeps asking, is it Susan Rice? Is it his witch wife? Who's actually been the commander-in-chief for 4 years?
You know, I don't know, but whoever it is running it into the ground. And I'm glad to see that this is over in just a couple of days. It's fascinating to watch this. I keep getting reminded that he's actually president of the United States. He's still president, Jesse. It's happening right now. We are in severe danger. This man still holds whatever power he seems to hold. He's using it quite a bit. But, man, it is fascinating to watch. I hadn't seen that clip yet. I'd heard about it, but hadn't seen it yet. He's not kidding. He doesn't go to the audience and be like, oh, can you guys fill in the dates? They all laugh. He's just an old man who doesn't know what he's supposed to do. Don't laugh at him.
Stu, you mentioned about all the damage they're doing on the way out. He's springing Yemeni terrorists from Guantanamo Bay, handing out billions in checks. I mean, you name it, they're doing it, right? Letting people off scot-free. Is Joe Biden, I can't help but think as I look at all the crap he's doing, is he just completely free of worrying about the Democrat Party since they screwed him over? And so if he's going to hurt their poll numbers some more on the way out, screw him.
Yeah, I think that might be part of why they're removing Cuba from the terror list, which was a pretty big one that a lot of Democrats in Florida were pissed off about. They're like, we're already getting killed in this state. Like, now you're going to do this? He doesn't seem to care about much of anything right now. And, you know, he keeps doing the things that he's doing. You mentioned, student loans, more of these unconstitutional student loan, situations where they're just giving basically our money to people who took out loans and they don't have to repay them anymore. You've got that going on. Of course, the offshore drilling is another one. We've been doing a series of shows called Biden's Parting Shots, and he just keeps doing them over and over and over again. One that wasn't covered all that widely, you may have hit it, Jesse, but I don't think a lot of people know about it, was this idea that they are now forcing, they're implementing a situation where they cannot put medical debt on credit reports. So if you owe $100,000 because of some surgery, some terrible thing that's happened, and you go to get a loan, they are making it so the banks can't see that you owe $100,000 to somebody else. And like, while I have empathy for people who go through a situation like that, obviously it's terrible and you hope to avoid it, but like, what is that put into place? Like, these companies are going to make loans to people. They don't understand their credit score. They don't understand what's going on with them. When they can't make the payments, all of their projections are going to be off. Does anybody remember 2008? Does anybody remember what went on? It's the same situation, and he's implementing it intentionally this time.
Stu, how's he get remembered? Is it a Jimmy Carter-style presidency where even today, I mean, my sons, who obviously were not alive when Jimmy Carter was there, I wasn't alive when Jimmy Carter was there, but everyone just kind of knows, oh, Jimmy Carter, it kind of sucked. Is that how Joe's going to be remembered? Because that's really how he should be remembered.
Jesse, I would say that is his absolute best case scenario. If he could be seen in his eyes as Jimmy Carter, who I think we all look at him as incompetent and a bad president, but generally speaking, a nice guy and not like, I don't think of him as one of the villains of American history per se. You know, I have a much lower opinion of a guy like Lyndon Johnson than I do of Jimmy Carter. Biden, though, is in that camp. I mean, he has governed as the most progressive president arguably in history. Thank God that damage is only limited to 4 years, but he's packed a lot of entertainment in those 4 years. And, I made this point before the election, and I think it will hold true to the day I die. The remembrance of Joe Biden, whether he should be elected or not, how he should be seen on presidential lists, just Afghanistan is enough. You need nothing else to know about this guy's legacy. He's done dozens of other horrible things throughout his presidency, but just the way that Afghanistan withdrawal, if you can call it that, played out is so destructive to the American experiment, to the legacy of this country, to what we've done, what it means globally to our allies. It was so horrible that just that one thing is enough to put him near the very bottom of all presidents. And if he's not, I mean, he may be at the very bottom, honestly, I think is the way that people are going to remember him.
He really may be at the very bottom. Speaking of bottoms, where do they dig up their next candidate from? I mean, Pete Buttigieg, obviously, is going to run. Gavin Newsom is going to run. Who's on the bench? Because I know Doan will probably run again, but after you tear through $1.5 billion, she's going to get the same 2% in the next primary that she got in the last one she actually ran in. Who's the next guy? They got to come up with one pretty quick.
It's a good point. I think, the terrible L.A. fires as a city burned down, so did Gavin Newsom 2028. So I think that one's gone at this point. You're right with Kamala. I don't think she has any chance. I don't think she's hated in the way that Hillary Clinton is hated on the left, because they saw the Hillary Clinton thing as this like unimaginable loss. How did you blow this? Where Kamala, I think they've ended with this excuse series where they're like, oh, well, she got in last minute, and they keep coming up with excuses. I don't think they despise her, but I don't think she can win. I think the big winner of the 2024 campaign for the Democrats was Josh Shapiro. The fact that he wasn't picked, when I think quite obviously he should have been the pick instead of Tim Walz, who's an absolute embarrassment and will be forgotten if he isn't forgotten already in weeks. But Josh Shapiro was the guy who I think now you kind of look back and maybe they should have picked him. He's still kind of clean in Pennsylvania. He hasn't had, you know, any big national scandals of note that people know about. So, I mean, I guess if I were to pick one right now, I might lean towards Shapiro, who has a lot of that sort of, you know, they say has that Obama-style charm. And he's been, at times, oddly pragmatic and sane. Like, after the Trump assassination, he wasn't like, actually, he wasn't shot. It was glass from the teleprompter. He was, like, really, you know, he was, like, pretty sane at that point. It's saying how terrible it was. And I thought handled that situation well. He's had a couple of other situations he's handled okay when it comes to, you know, bridge collapses and such. So I don't know. If you're going to pick one this far out, which is probably too early, I'd say Shapiro.
Yeah, I guess we'll see if the whole being Jewish thing is still a problem for Democrat primary voters, because it certainly was the last time. Stu.
Sure was.
You are the man, brother. Come back soon. I almost forgot. I almost forgot that after Trump got shot in the head, we even had people like Christopher Wray speculating, well, I mean, it might have just been glass. We're not really sure. These people are psychopaths. Anyway, we're not quite done yet. Hang on.
Corinne, we're sort of dancing around who gets to take credit for this deal.
No one's dancing around here.
Our colleagues that yeah. President Trump was critical in getting this deal over the line. Do you not agree with that statement?
I'm not going to speak to a random
it's
person.
I
don't know who this person is. I'm not
going.
Oh, what I can say is, look, obviously Matt Miller will speak for himself.
Some random person. The spokesman for their own State Department? What an odd bunch of communists in the White House. Joining me now, my friend Sean Spicer of the wonderful Sean Spicer Show. Sean, you have stood at that podium. You've done that job. Not an easy job by any stretch of the imagination. Give old Corinne Diversity Hire a grade. How'd she do?
Well, I don't know this because the best, I got an F once, but I don't know what's below that. Because back, actually, I got like this circle around it that was like, you were actually really failing. Let me just tell you a couple things that are important since you played that clip. Number one, it really shows what a moron she is. The idea that you call the State Department spokesman a random person. Number two, that you don't know them. Number three, you haven't coordinated it. What do I mean by that? Just so your viewers get this. If I were going out, when I was at the U.S. Trade Rep's office and I was the spokesman, Dana Perino, Tony Snow, with the press secretaries in the White House, I would tell them, I'm going out. We're going to announce something. This is what we're saying. Here are our talking points. Here's our statement on it for approval to make sure that that was consistent with what they were going to say on the podium. Conversely, when I was press secretary, I would make sure all the agencies, et cetera, let me know what they were going to be saying so I could say earlier the White House, I mean the State Department, the Department of Defense, et cetera, said the following, right? So that reveals such a level of incompetence that I don't know where to begin. But as I was getting ready for the show and your team said that they wanted to play this clip, I thought of another thing that I'm going to give exclusively to Jesse Kelly. I have said that there are two things that Caroline Leavitt has going for her coming into this job as White House press secretary. Number one, she worked there before. That's just an inherent advantage. She understands the logistics of the press operations that most folks don't get the opportunity to do. Number two, she has a fantastic relationship with Donald Trump. Okay. Those are the two things that I've been telling people why I think she'll be successful. When your producer said that they were going to play this clip, I thought, I'm adding a third. When I became press secretary, I succeeded Josh Ernst, who was President Obama's last press secretary. Josh was very competent at the job. He's a very nice guy and very well liked by the press corps. And so it was difficult coming into a job where you knew that everybody liked Josh. He did a very good job, right? So I had to go, oh gosh, I'm following this guy. Granted, he's from the other party that clearly everybody likes and they respect him. Caroline's walking into a job where as long as you breathe, you are going to do a better job than this one.
It's It's all about the starting point. It's all about where the bar is.
I had a buddy of mine back in the day who was taking a job, and he said, the current person in there is horrible. And I said, that's the beauty. All you have to do is suck less. You don't even have to do a good job. Mm-hmm. And that's what Caroline has to do going in. Now, unfortunately, Donald Trump's a tough boss. But literally, after Corinne Jean-Pierre, you just have to suck less.
What do you mean, tough boss? He call you in after your press conferences and whip you for things, or what?
There was no physical violence, but there was the verbal equivalent.
Oh, Sean, I've got to know. What'd you screw up that made him mad? Give it to me.
Oh, I remember during the transition at one point, I had recommended, there was this opportunity, the New York Times wanted him to go to the New York Times. And I said, what are you kidding me? You just became president. You don't go to them. They come to you. And frankly, the New York Times sucks, and I don't think we should do it. And he lit into me. And I never forget this, because another senior aide at the time looked over at me and said, don't worry, that's nothing. And I said, are you kidding me? I've never been, you know, but Trump just, on the flip side, just to be fair and clear, when you knock it out of the park, he lets you know that too, right? So he is you never worry about where you stand with Donald Trump. Like when I did well, I got a bear hug from him once. But when you screw up, you don't have to wonder what he thinks.
Sean, doesn't this back up the point I made a long time ago, switching gears back to Corinne Diversity Hire, that Jen Psaki, of course I was not a fan of Jen Psaki, but she did the job of press secretary very well. She had to be press secretary for a non-functional old man surrounded by communists, but she lied very well, represented herself, represented him as good as you can possibly do. And I used to tell everyone that, and they said I was crazy until Corinne got there, and now everyone sees what I saw. Jen Psaki was not bad at the job.
Right. Corinne Jean-Pierre is like asking me to perform orthopedic surgery. I have no ability to do that and no formal training. Jen Psaki, lover, hater, your analysis is exactly right. She was a trained professional, okay? She spent a career. She was the State Department spokesman, Obama's campaign spokesman. She'd been the White House communications director. Corinne Jean-Pierre was Kamala Harris's campaign chief of staff. She was a field organizer that's not kidding. Seriously. And she was John Edwards, if you remember him from North Carolina, a field organizer for him. She wasn't a press person. They literally, and I will tell you this, because I've had this discussion with others, and this isn't anything in, you know, secret that I've shared with Caroline. But your principal deputy in the press office is, in military terms, your XO. They are your right hand. They are keeping the trains on time. They are making sure that when you are in countless meetings of massive importance, that they are your eyes and ears. Jen Psaki chose her to be her XO, her right hand, her number two, her senior executive vice president. I wouldn't hire that woman for anything. And so it does make me question Jen Psaki, her judgment. The idea that you tell people, and by the way, on the way out, she's the most qualified person to do this job. I mean, that's, look, I get you have to lie for Biden, but at some point, that's for your reputation.
Sean, one thing I have really enjoyed is Jill Biden not really keeping that much of a lid on the complete disdain she has for Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi, all the rest of them. I am so enjoying the palace intrigue, mainly because we're not involved and it's all the worst people in the world throwing poop at each other. I think it's fantastic.
So I'm going to give you the word of the day, and I'm going to steal it. I got to give credit where credit is due, my buddy Tony Katz. The word of the day is bitter, and Jill Biden is bitter. If you read the story in the Washington Post, she's pissed at Nancy Pelosi. The interaction with her at the with Kamala at the Carter funeral was epic. I mean, she does not mince words. She is petty and bitter, and it shows. And I frankly, it's not that I don't understand it. I mean, Kamala Harris trashed Bo Biden. She trashed them. She lost the race in epic fashion. She blamed Joe Biden. She did a horrible job after having the mantle handed to her. She's pissed at Nancy Pelosi for throwing her husband under the bus and thought that they actually were friends. Welcome to Washington, get a dog. I mean, these guys couldn't, I mean, by the way, just as a side note, the Bidens couldn't even get a dog the right way. The dog bit, I mean, they always, you know, what's that famous saying? Like, if you can't find a friend, get a dog. They can't even get that right. The dog bit everyone.
Sean, does this take some of the bloom off of Barack Obama's rose? I know Barack Obama was instrumental in knifing Joe Biden out the White House. Barack Obama was also instrumental in rallying $1.5 billion for Kamala Harris to light on fire in front of the entire country. Now, Barack Obama is a mover and a shaker in Democrat circles. Does this diminish him a little?
So there's two ways to look at this. I've generally looked at it for the longest time as he can't get anybody to succeed him. They're not rallying. But on the same time, you do have to flip it and say, does this make him look better? Like, look at all I was able to do and nobody can hit that bar again, right? Look at how awesome I am. Joe Biden couldn't hit it. Kamala Harris couldn't hit it. I'm the only one who can hit it. I'm the only popular person. You've got to stick with me. I'm the only one who can beat anybody. I'm the only one who can mobilize and organize and unify the party. Everybody else has tried. So I guess the question is, what is his goal? Is his goal to create an army of successors? Or all, because you can't, I mean, Bill Clinton's tarnished, right? No one wants to be, I mean, we all have now come to realize that, like, you know, the literally they're what the bloom and all the petals and everything has come off that rose. So Barack Obama is the only living guy in the Democratic Party that's a draw. And there's got to be something inside of him that says, hey, this isn't bad being the kingmaker. The guy that everybody who wants to run has to come kiss their ass. I mean, there's all those stories, Pete Buttigieg, others, and they make the trip and they ask him, what can you do and how should I win and what should my strategy be? The second that there's a next person, then he's not the guy anymore. And I have started to think that he enjoys everyone else losing because he remains in pole position in the Democratic Party.
I could see that. John, as always, thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Lighten the mood time. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And as always, do not forget to go subscribe to the YouTube channel. We have things on there you can't get here. YouTube.com/@JesseKellyDC. I know it's a mouthful, so just scan the whole thing now. If there's one thing we enjoy on this show now and forever, it's making fun of Adam Schiff, who fell asleep yesterday.
All right, I assume you agree with me that Chinese cyber warfare, espionage, malign influence is an existential threat to America.
Nappy time.
It is an existential threat, Senator, and also I have not seen it yet, but from what I've heard about former FBI Director Wray's comments on 60 Minutes regarding China, sleeper cells within our own country infiltrating
right
our water systems, our natural gas lines, telecommunications.
There's the sleeper cell.
A very
nappy time killed me. I'll see you tomorrow.